Episode 2 of Stir Fried Stochasticity is brought to you by Snot in Your Food on Purpose. Ew. Good diurnal period, fellow squishy organic beings and sympathetic non-murderous mechanical intelligences. After last episode, you may have been concerned for my well-being, but it's nothing to be worrying about. Having read my copy of Daniel Wilson's How to Survive a Robot Uprising, I was well prepared, and the encounter ended as anyone who has ever seen a bad science fiction show would expect. Wildly flailing robotic graspers, flying sparks, and shouts of, "Does not compute, does not compute." No problem. Fleshy organic beings 1, robot overlords 0. Your move, robot overlords. Meanwhile, I have a thrill-packed, mind-blowing, laugh-a-minute paper for you today about snot. Germ-infected snot, no less. For food. Well, okay, not really snot. Today's paper is W.K. Ding and N.P. Shaw's Effect of Various Encapsulating Materials on the Stability of Probiotic Bacteria, found in the March 2009, Volume 74, Number 2 edition of The Journal of Food Science. For those of us who went to public school, the title means the authors are testing different types of snot to see which kinds might help bacteria survive longer. Specifically, they want to see how bacteria might be protected while being eaten and sent through the harsh, bacteria-killing environment of your guts. Probiotic bacteria are our friends. The hypothesis is that by having a large population of friendly bacteria living in your guts, it's a lot harder for unfriendly, disease-causing bugs to move in.
I should clarify, this isn't the hypothesis that the authors are actually testing here, just a description.
Probiotic bacteria help us digest food, and some even make vitamins for us. This is why marketers like to emphasize the live and active cultures aspect of many brands of yogurt, which might help supplement your gut's population of friendly bacteria. But there's a problem. Your guts are not really very nice to bacteria. Your stomach is full of hydrochloric acid and tends to kill off potentially friendly bacteria, and then anything that manages to survive that has to deal with bile from your gallbladder, which also tends to kill off probiotic bacteria. Although a few bacterial cells are likely to survive, it takes more than a few to influence the makeup of your intestine's resident microbes. That's where the study comes in. What I've been facetiously referring to as snot because of their slimy textures are really just a selection of common thickening ingredients used in food, whose names you might recognize if you've ever looked at the ingredients listed on your food's labels. Specifically, the authors have taken alginate, guar gum, xanthan gum, locust bean gum, and carrageenan. They've mixed each with several different types of bacteria used in yogurt and similar products, and then turned the bacteria-loaded slime into tiny congealed beads. Then they soaked each sample of these, which I can't resist calling bio-boogers, in simulated stomach acid and simulated bile for 2 hours each, while they watched to see how fast the bacteria in the little bio-boogers were killed off in the process. These gums, incidentally, are all polysaccharides, meaning they're made of long chains of sugar molecules, just like the familiar corn snot and fruit snot, cornstarch and pectin. The following are the details of this study. For those of you who don't care about the details, you can skip ahead to about
the 8-minute mark or so,
where I'll give an executive summary. The authors grew cultures of several strains of the genera Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium, Lactobacillus rhamnosus, salivarius, Plantarum, Acidophilus, and Paracasei, and Bifidobacterium longum and lactis. They were cultured in MRS broth, then concentrated down to about 10 million colony-forming units per milliliter. They say colony-forming units instead of a simple word like cells, because they only want to count specifically the cells that are still healthy enough to grow up into normal colonies when they're put into a culture plate later. MRS stands for Deman, Rugosa, and Sharp, the names of the authors who first published the recipe for this culture medium, which is specifically tuned for growing Lactobacillus species. If you're a real microbiology nerd, next time you have to mention growing lactic acid bacteria in a report, you'll remember to cite the publication. It is Deman, J.D., Rugosa, M., and Sharp, M.E. Quote, a medium for the cultivation of lactobacilli, unquote. 1960, Journal of Applied Bacteriology, Volume 23, pages 130 to 135. Each of these cultures was then mixed into 3% solutions of each kind of snot, 3 grams of dried alginate, guar gum, locust bean gum, xanthan gum, and carrageenan powders, each mixed into 100 milliliters of water. Then they mixed each of those into 600 milliliters of vegetable oil, with a milliliter of polysorbate 80 to help it mix. They shoved the whole mess through a kind of super science, high-pressure nanotechnology Play-Doh fun factory device called a microfluidizer, which squeezes the mixture through tiny little holes at high pressure to mix them up. The idea here is that the watery bacteria-loaded gums won't mix well with the oil, and you end up with them formed into tiny little droplets, like the ones you see when you shake up oil and vinegar dressing, only much smaller and hopefully all pretty close to the same size. Once that was done, they added calcium chloride and stuck the samples in the fridge to solidify. The calcium ions apparently get in between the long stringy polysaccharide molecules that the gums are made of and help the strands stick together, which makes the little beads harden up into little bio-boogers. While they were at it, they also kept unencapsulated cultures to use as controls for their experiments, so that they could tell how their experiment compared to unprotected bacteria. As a bonus, they also made up a batch of this stuff with a fluorescent dye instead of bacteria, a dye called 6-carboxyfluorescein. That way they could do a separate test to see how slowly small molecules like the dye would leak out of the gum. Okay, still with me? Congratulations, you've survived the complicated part. The rest is just testing. The simulated stomach acid was MRS broth, brought down to a pH of 2 with extra hydrochloric acid. The simulated bile was a substance called taurocholic acid, mixed in with MRS media. Taurocholic acid is a main component of bile. They mixed that in at a rate of 3 grams per 100 milliliters. Samples of each encapsulated culture and unencapsulated control culture were added to each of these, and then tested every 30 minutes for 2 hours to see how many bacteria were still alive. The bonus test with the fluorescent dye was just a matter of dumping samples of the dyed bio-booger material in water for 2 weeks and then checking to see how much of it had leaked out. Finally, as tradition demands, they took their results home in the form of a bunch of numbers to make pretty graphs and charts on their computers with. The authors give detailed tables and graphs showing their results, which you can find in their paper if you're interested. In summary, the seaweed snots, alginate and carrageenan, and the bacteria snot, xanthan gum, all showed substantial ability to protect the bacteria from stomach acid and bile. Most of the bacteria in these materials were still alive at levels of around 10 to the 7th, that's 10 million, colony-forming units per milliliter after 1 hour, which the authors cite from a 1998 paper as the concentration necessary to be useful as a probiotic supplement. The bean snots, guar gum and locust bean gum, didn't do so well, though they still did better than the unprotected bacteria. Alginate, xanthan gum, and carrageenan also leaked a lot less dye in the 2-week dye leakage test. Now, for those of you too busy berating your chauffeur for distracting you while driving you around the city in your gold-plated Hummer H3 limo, here's the short version. The researchers here have taken several kinds of common food thickening ingredients and mixed them with healthy food bacteria to make itty-bitty little capsules of live cells, in the hope that the thickening ingredients might keep healthy yogurt bacteria alive in the harsh environment of people's guts long enough for the bacteria to be beneficial to the eater. They found that alginate, xanthan gum, and carrageenan all worked pretty well for this, but that guar gum and locust bean gum weren't really that helpful. They also demonstrated that other water-soluble sorts of substances also tend to leak out more slowly in the same 3 thickeners that protected the bacteria best. Some of you might be thinking what most of the population thinks when they hear what's in a scientific publication. So what? Who cares? Well, I'll tell you who. First, anyone who eats food and has a digestive system. This study's results appear to be useful, practical information for development of healthier foods. To add my own speculation to what the authors actually discuss, it looks as though this technique could also be used to more effectively carry other nutritious substances or perhaps medicines into your digestive system. I'm definitely not a medical scientist, but I still might suggest that this encapsulation technique might be turned into a comparatively pleasant alternative for the very effective but somewhat disgusting medical treatment known as fecal transplant. Having spent enough time by now talking about snot and boogers already, I'll spare you the details, other than to say that yes, it is a real and legitimate treatment, particularly for certain bacterial infections of the digestive tract, and it really is more or less what the name suggests. You can find the details online if you really want them. Another population who might care about this research is made up of molecular gastronomes. For those of us who went to public school, that's a fancy way to say food nerds. The encapsulation technique describes sounds like something that I could feasibly use myself. I may not have access to a grotesquely expensive device like a microfluidizer, but I can certainly get my hands on a French press and a blender. For purposes of home food experimentation, I suspect that'd be good enough. And in any case, I would hypothesize that the larger bio-boogers resulting from the simpler equipment might resist stomach acid longer anyway. Hillbilly Biotech, in my kitchen, it's more likely than you think. In closing, thank you for listening to Episode 2 of Stir-Fried Stochasticity. This little cry for attention slash audio-based march towards world domination is admittedly off to a pretty slow start, since as I record this, it appears that perhaps 3 or 4 people even know this project exists. Still, what feedback I've gotten so far has been very encouraging, and no doubt in time I will build this into a globe-spanning media empire that shall make me the richest, most influential person in the world! No. No, wait. That won't work. How the heck am I going to become Oprah Winfrey? Never mind. I guess I'll settle for being productively useful for as many people as possible. Anyway, as I record this episode, I'm planning to aim for 2 to 3 episodes per month. Though if there's enough interest, I can probably manage to crank up to once a week or so. I have a growing selection of possible papers that might interest me for upcoming episodes. I have a paper written in the 1950s that I originally tracked down after seeing it reported as arguing that it's impossible to get drunk on beer. I've gotten an excellent suggestion to do one on what is probably the classic paper on gene regulation. The Minister of Domestic Affairs here at the Asylum for the Sufficiently Nerdy happens to be a doctor of roctology and has suggested a number of classic earth science papers. I even may have a possible classic physics paper picked out for April 1st next year already. All that and much, much more. Feel free to leave any suggestions that you may have, along with any other commentary, criticism, and tasteful personal abuse on the website, bigroom.org/stirfry, where you should find a link to the current episode, any previous episodes, and to the comment forum. Thanks again, everyone. This has been Episode 2 of Stir-Fried Stochasticity. Bio-boogers. Is anybody else getting hungry, or is it just me? When you're kissing with your honey, and your nose gets sort of runny, you may think it's funny, but it's not.